Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm Mark LeVonier. It's our New Year's Eve special, where for the next 2 hours in two parts, we'll hear a broadcast that represented NBC Radio's most ambitious and pretty much final attempt at a major variety program, and that series was The Big Show. On radio for less than 2 years, heard Sunday nights at 6, the program cast a wide net with its stars, from musicians to comedians to stage and movie actors, helmed by the incomparable and often over-the-top actor Tallulah Bankhead. Though best known for her theater and screen roles in the 1940s, she was very much steeped in radio. At the point of this episode in 1950, being part of the program's grueling weekly schedule of rehearsals and rewrites, and with some certainty commanding a salary that contributed to the show's budget of about $3,500 a minute in today's money. Though not even close to a big success on the network, the show is still a fun listen and a great way to spend New Year's Eve. Here's the first part of The Big Show from December 31st, 1950 on NBC.
You are about to be entertained by some of the biggest names in show business. For the next hour and 30 minutes, this program will present in person such bright stars as
Vivian Blaine,
Jose Ferrer, Sam Levine, Ken Murray,
Margaret O'Brien,
Gloria Swanson,
Fran Warren,
Meredith Wilson,
and my name, darling, is Tallulah Bankhead.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The Big Show.
God is good, America, the curtains of America. We're going to fill your parlors full of stars.
The Big Show, 90 minutes with the most scintillating personalities in the entertainment world. Brought to you this Sunday and every Sunday at the same time as the Sunday feature of NBC's All-Star Festival. And here is your hostess, the glamorous, unpredictable Tallulah Bankhead.
Well, darling, how did Santa Claus treat you? I must tell you about one beautiful present I received. A new mink coat. My best friend sent it to me. I bought it myself. I saw it in the window. I liked it. I decided I simply must have it. I wrote out a check for $10,000 and took the coat with me. When I got home, I decided I'd been a little too extravagant, and so I sent it back. And what an odd coincidence. The coat got back to the store just as my check came back from the bank. But Christmas is behind us now, and we have a show to do. Last week, on our Christmas program, one of our guest stars was Margaret O'Brien of the movies. She did so well, too well to suit me, that she's with us again this week, a sort of Christmas hangover for me. I wish I could take an Aniston and make her disappear. But she's been held over by popular demand. Not mine, you understand. The child is too talented, much too talented. After all, a job is a job.
I'm not trying to take your job, Miss Bankhead.
Well, darling, little Margaret O'Brien.
I want to thank you, Miss Bankhead, for your lovely Christmas present.
Oh, do you like it, darling?
Oh, yes. It was sweet of you to send me a one-way railroad ticket to California.
I thought I wrapped it nicely.
Oh, it was super.
It was what, dear?
It was super.
A chief, of course.
But I'm not going back to California, Miss Bankhead.
You're not?
I'm going to stick right close to you.
You are not.
Because I've decided I want to be a great actress just like you are.
Oh, darling, isn't he sweet?
There's so much I can learn from you, Miss Bankhead.
Oh, Margaret, you may call me Tallulah.
Oh, may I? Thank you.
So you want to be an actress, little Margaret?
Yes, I do, big Tallulah. You see, I think a person should have an ambition, a goal in life. For 13 years now, I've been drifting aimlessly. Of course, for the last 7 years, I made a niche for myself in the movies.
Yes, a 7-year niche. And what did you do the first 6 years of your life? You're just a bum, I suppose.
Yes, those were bad years. I was disorganized, confused, tortured. I couldn't decide whether I should be in the theater or the movies. I became so nervous I was eating 2 packs of chocolate cigarettes a day.
Yes, I see you still have the chocolate stains on your index finger. And I'll bet you used to hit that pablum bottle pretty hard, too.
But now I know that the theater is my real life. And you're the one I want to pattern myself after.
Oh, isn't it?
To be an actress like you, acclaimed by the critics, applauded by the public, a magnetic, dynamic, electric personality. Soul it up.
Watch your language, child.
I mean, the way you walk out on the stage without any assistance. That's acting, Miss Tallulah.
That's black coffee, child.
That's my ambition, to be a big star like you are. And then, after I've had my success, and if I had to retire and wind up on radio like you did, well, those are the chances a person has to take.
Darling, how would you like a shot in the head? Besides, Margaret, actresses never retire. They are always between plays.
Between plays?
Yes, remember that. And besides, Margaret, I must warn you, the theater's an exacting taskmaster. To become a fine actress, it will take you years.
Oh, I don't care. I want to become a fine actress like you. Even it takes me years and years and years and years
now,
and
years.
Now,
just a minute. I wonder where this child is getting her material. Margaret, here's lesson number 2. An actress is very sensitive about her age. But then I wouldn't expect you to understand that at the tender age of 13.
12 and a half. I want to be just as sensitive as you are.
Oh, Margaret, you're just a child. Now, why are we standing here talking about the theater, such grown-up talk for a little girl? Let's talk about the holiday season. Now, let me tell you all about New Year's Eve.
No, don't tell me all about New Year's Eve. Why don't you just tell me all about Eve?
So that's where she's been getting her material. Well, I'll put a stop to this. Meredith Wilson.
Yes, Miss Bankhead. I want to thank you, Margaret, for that Christmas present.
You're welcome.
Of course, I have no plans to go to California right away.
What?
But Margaret sent me a one-way ticket to California, and it was very nicely wrapped, too. By the way, Miss Bankhead, thank you for your present. It was just what I needed, a box of Fragile.
Meredith, that was a 5-piece set of cut cloth.
There was more pieces than that when I got it.
And, well, I want to thank you, Meredith, for that darling scarf you sent me and that delightfully warm Christmas card you enclosed. 60% rayon, 40% wool. How warm can you get? Well, now, darling, how about the music, Meredith?
Well, sir, Miss Bankhead. This is the big week in football. The bowl games, you know. So I wrote a song for my home state university, Iowa.
Oh, is Iowa in one of the bowl games?
Well, not exactly. They might have had a chance, though. See, Iowa was just nosed out in a game with Ohio State. 83-21.
That's quite a nose.
Well, Iowa just couldn't get going in that game. Every time we started setting up a play, somebody fumbled the ball and we couldn't get to our next play. Always got caught between plays.
I'm between plays too, Meredith.
What?
Never mind, Meredith. Let's hear the Iowa fight song you wrote for Iowa, but which is dedicated to all the teams who didn't get into any of the bowl games tomorrow, but who are going to, by golly, make it next year or bust.
Thank you. What's the word?
Meredith, that was really swell. You've got quite a band there.
Ken Murray.
Hello, Tallulah. Tallulah, I was just listening to that Iowa fight song that Wilson wrote. Kind of brings back old memories to me.
Oh, really, darling? You went to college in Iowa, too?
Oh, no, no. As a matter of fact, I didn't go to college at all. I don't believe a man has to go to college to get an education and acquire a polish. I'm proud to say that I learned all I know in the school of H.N.
School of H.N.?
Hard knocks.
Well, it wouldn't have hurt you to have had a short spell in college, dear.
Oh, no, not me, Tallulah. You see, I started in show business when I was a kid. Never had a chance to go to school, but I used to read books all the time. Right now, I've settled down here in New York, and I've got Dr. Elliott's 5-foot bookshelf in my home.
But do you read the books in the 5-foot bookshelf?
Oh, sure. I read about 3 inches every night.
My, you read quick.
Yeah, I read that, too. We all read in my family. I read, my dog reads, even my wife, and even my dog reads.
A dog reads?
Yes, yes. For Christmas, I got him a copy of Bulldog Drummond. Of course, he's just starting to read books now. When he was a puppy, we broke him in on newspapers. But, Tallulah, I came over here to your program for a very special reason. I'm not here to be entertaining.
What makes you think you have been, darling?
I do a television program. How would you like to be a guest on my TV show?
I would rather die.
What makes you think you won't, darling?
Now, look here, crude cut. I'm quite satisfied to be doing the show I'm doing here.
But, Tallulah, radio is old hat.
But, Ken, television is old movies.
Not on my show. I'd certainly like to have you on my television show with me, though.
Oh, stop talking about it, darling. Whenever anyone mentions television to me, I see red.
I'll pay you $5,000.
All of a sudden, I see green. Tell me more about it, darling.
Well, there are a few things you'll have to change. For instance, if you wanted to wear a black dress like you're wearing now, you'd have to wear a red dress, because, you see, red photographs black, you see?
Oh, I have a red dress. But what about my hair, darling?
I'd wear that, too. Oh, I'm sorry. You mean the color of your hair. I'm so sorry. Well, we had a girl on the show with hair just those same colors. But to make it photograph better, we had to give her a blue rinse. Boy, was she sore.
Blue or top, huh? What about makeup? I suppose makeup is a big factor.
Oh, yes. Makes a big difference. Because otherwise, you see, you don't photograph with the right coloring. You see, and then, of course, I'll have to give you some jokes to tell.
I suppose the jokes will photograph blue. Oh, Ken, I'm sorry I forgot. I want to introduce you to my protege, my new protege. She decided she wants to become a great actress in the theater, and she's trying to pattern herself after me. Come here, Margaret, sweetie. Margaret O'Brien, this is Mr. Murray.
Hello, Arthur.
Shall we dance? She sure is patterning herself after you, Tallulah. So you want to act in the theater, Margaret. How old are you?
12.
That's my girl who said that. Ken, why don't you put Margaret on your show?
Well, I'd like to, but don't you think that she's a little Y-U-N-G? I'd rather have Y-O-U on my T-E-L-O... I mean, my T-O-L-I... How do you spell television?
Darling, when I go on television, it'll be spelled T-A-L-L-U... V-I-S-I-O-N.
Oh, Tallulah-vision, huh?
I've made up my mind to be in the theater like Tallulah.
Oh, what are you doing now, Margaret?
I'm between plays.
Oh, you've already been in some plays?
No, she's between her first play.
Well, have you seen any of the plays since you've been in town, Margaret?
Oh, yes, I went to see King Lear by Shakespeare.
That's a lot of laughs, isn't it?
And I saw the Cocktail Party by T.S. Eliot.
Good man, T.S. I've got his 5-foot bookshelf, you know.
And I saw Enemy of the People.
Starring Milton Berle, I suppose. Look, Margaret, didn't you go to see any of the lighter things? Some musical comedies, maybe?
Oh, no, I wouldn't go to musical comedies. They're so cheap, and the prices are so high, and besides, I couldn't get any tickets.
You're right, Margaret. I wanted to see one of the musicals this week. I know the star of the show very well. She happens to be a personal enemy of mine. So I went to the producer and I asked him for a pair of tickets. And do you know that I couldn't get them for love or money?
Tallulah, I've got a ticket broker who gets all the tickets to the theaters for me. He got me a couple for Guys or Dolls. Guys and Dolls, I think that is. Of course, I had to send him a nice Christmas present.
No, well, speaking of Guys and Dolls, we happen to have two of the stars of that show with us today. Vivian Blaine and Sam Levine. And after Vivian sings her song, Margaret, you ask her for a couple of tickets. I'm sure she has them. Meredith, darling. Darling Meredith, are you ready for Vivian Blaine's song?
Oh, sure. All set.
Hiya, Meredith.
Hello, Ken Murray. Well, as I always say, long time no see.
Yes, you do always say that, and that's why no long time no see. Meredith, I want to thank you for your Christmas present.
Oh, you're welcome, Ken. I wrapped it up pretty nicely, didn't you think?
Yes, I'm very sorry I can't use it. I don't sleep well on trains. You don't mind, I'm sure. I gave it to somebody for a Christmas present.
That one-way ticket is making a round trip. Meredith, what is Vivian Blaine going to sing, huh?
Well, Vivian has a wonderful arrangement of What Is This Thing Called Love.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, Vivian Blaine with Meredith Wilson's orchestra and chorus in What Is This Thing Called Love.
Funny thing of love.
Congratulations, not only for your song, but for the enormous success you've made in Guys and Dolls.
Thank you very much. You're very kind, Tallulah.
Yes, I know. Now, look, Vivian, little Margaret here is interested in the story of your musical comedy. Why don't you tell her what it's all about?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I can't do that. We're not allowed to give away the plot.
Oh, you can't even give it away.
You're so wrong, Tallulah. We're selling out every performance.
I got in on a couple of passes.
Yes, that's what I heard. The manager made one, and the box office man made one.
You're just jealous because you can't get any tickets, and you're in the show.
It just so happens, Tallulah, darling, that I have two very good seats with me.
Yes, you have, darling. And it might interest you to know that when I saw your show, I was sitting in the very front row. I'm sure you must have seen me.
Oh, no. I never look way up there.
And now, just a moment. Why is it that everyone who comes on the show starts picking on me? I try to be special.
Oh, excuse me, Tallulah.
What is it, Margaret?
Let me, please. Hello, Vivian, darling.
Why, Margaret O'Brien, hello. Golly, I haven't seen you in years. Remember when I met you out in Hollywood when I was making pictures? Well, you remember. You must have seen me in State Fair.
Oh, yes, darling. You won a blue ribbon for that, didn't you?
That's my girl who said that.
Well, that's a new twist. Hiring a little girl to insult your guests.
Oh, no, Vivian. Margaret didn't really mean it. She's just trying to help me out. Very, very interested in seeing your play. Now, you said you had a couple of tickets.
Why, yes, indeed I have. I'll be glad to give them to her.
Oh, wonderful, darling. I hope you'll be able to understand it. The show is quite adult, I hear.
How old are you now, Margaret?
11.
Oh. Why, she'll be able to understand it, because by the time she can use these tickets, she'll be 15.
You have tickets 4 years in advance.
Why not? Every night there's a sign in front of the box office that says SRO, standing room only.
So what? When I was in Private Life, we had the SRO sign in the box office, too.
Yes, it was SRO. 6 rows only.
Just a minute. Just a minute. If you two dolls will excuse me.
Sam Levine.
I've been standing here listening to you two dolls beating each other's brains out. This one says she's got 2 seats. That one says, why don't you try standing room? The other one says it won a blue ribbon. So enough already. Now, what does this kid want, this little Miss Margaret O'Brien?
All she wants, darling, is to buy 2 tickets to your show.
That's all. For this, we went through this hoo-ha and mishmash with Vivian. Stop tumbling. 2 tickets to Guys and Dolls can be arranged.
Oh, you mean you have 2 tickets?
Well, not with me. Who carries that much cash?
Well, you mean you know where you can get a pair of tickets?
What a question to ask, Sam Levine. Now, I'd like to ask you a question for your own information. Who has been on Broadway longer than I have? Oh, I'm sorry. That's an unfair question to ask you.
Mr. Levine, what is the point besides the one your hat is on?
Oh, you're going to start again with the 2 seats, huh? Look, Tallulah, what I'm trying to point out to one and all is that I happen to have connections with a certain highly placed gentleman who can put put their dukes on a pair of ducats for a friend anytime. And I happen to be that friend. All that it takes is a telephone call. I know the right people. I happen to be the star of the biggest hit on Broadway, and I have plenty of influence. So show me the telephone and give me a slug.
Don't tempt me.
Huh?
Sammy, you won't need a slug. Just pick up any phone here and make your call. This is NBC. They have thousands of telephones.
Thousands of phones? What a location for a bookie. Oh, when you stop to think how unfair life can be. I got a friend, Benny the Book, has one lousy telephone. They came and they tore it out by the roots. And besides, they arrested him.
Oh. Did they send him up the river?
No, it was his first offense. He's just up the creek.
Sam, we were going to make a phone call. Here, use this one.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure he'll be in. This is Sunday. They don't run anywhere on Sunday.
Sam, you're not calling a horse player to get tickets to your show.
Why not? He's a mutual friend of mine.
A $2 mutual friend of yours.
Well, I haven't seen him in months. The last time I saw him was, May, June, July, Saratoga, September. Oh, hello, Marvin. Oh, Irving. Oh, Marvin ain't there. Irving, this is Sam. Could you ask Joey to run across the street to Manny, Max, and Eddie's and ask Sal to send Marvin to the phone? Yeah, tell him it's Sam Levine. Sam Levine, the actor. All right, Sam Levine, the bum. What? Just for going across the street? Okay, I'll stand good for it. Go call.
Look, Sam, if you're going to call every Tom, Dick, and Harry in town...
Who called Tom, Dick, and Harry? I called for Marvin, and Irving said he would send Joey to Manny, Max, and Eddie.
All right, already. Let's get the tickets.
Okay, so Joey went to call Marvin. It's a person-to-person call. That would make the tickets cost $5 extra.
What's the $5 for?
Well, you can't expect Joey to walk across the street for nothing. He only makes $2.50 on it. The other $2.50 is for the premium for the accident insurance in case while he's crossing the street, he should get knocked down by an automobile.
What am I doing in radio? I could get myself a pair of track shoes and I'm in business.
Look, Tululu, I'm doing this for you out of the goodness of my heart, plus a small fee for incidentals. I wouldn't get tickets for anybody else in the world, but for you, I'm going to this trouble.
Well, if I'd known you had to put so many men on the job, I wouldn't have asked you. How long is it going to take?
It'll take only long enough for Joey to get Marvin and then to come to the phone.
Well, Joey should be back by now.
Well, look, figure it out. First, he's got to shave. Then he's got to put on a shirt and a tie.
Shave to go to Manny, Max, and Eddie's? What is it? One of those fancy restaurants where you can't eat unless you wear a tie?
At Manny, Max, and Eddie's, you cannot eat at any time. It's an auto supply store.
A formal auto supply store. You have to dress.
Well, they run a little handbook in the back. And they could get raided any minute. So how would Joey look in the lineup without a shave and a tie?
Ghastly, I'm sure.
By the way, I should mention, in case they are raided, there'll be an extra $500 added to the tickets. Bail.
Margaret, darling, won't you reconsider that one-way ticket to California?
Yes, maybe it would be cheaper. Meredith, can you give me that railroad ticket back?
Gee, I'd like to, Margaret, but I gave it to Ken Murray. Hey, Ken, if you're not going to use that railroad ticket, I...
Oh, I'm sorry, Meredith, but I gave the ticket away to somebody who did me a favor. Maybe I could get it back for you if I can use the phone.
Hello, Marvin. Oh, Joey. So where's Marvin? Look, I want you should get me right away a couple of tickets to Guys and Dolls. All right, Guys and Dolls. So where's Marvin? He left town. Somebody gave him a Christmas present. A one-way ticket to California. Oh, fine. Well, Tallulah, I tried and I failed. Now, there's only one thing left to do. Here, I'll give you these two tickets that I got in my pocket for tomorrow night.
Oh, Sam, you mean that you had those tickets in your pocket all the time?
Yeah, go ahead, take them. I'll let you have them for cost. $40.
$40 for a pair of theater tickets? Well, I'd rather wait till your scalper friend Marvin gets back. And I can get them from him for less than that.
Tallulah, don't be a schlemiel. Where do you think Marvin gets his tickets from?
The Big Show. This is the National Broadcasting Company Sunday extravaganza with the most scintillating personalities in show business. The Big Show, the Sunday night feature of NBC's All-Star Festival, is brought to you by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, and by the makers of Anacin, for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. The big stars on this program are Vivian Blaine, Jose Ferrer, Sam Levine, Ken Murray, Margaret O'Brien, Gloria Swanson, Fran Warren, Meredith Wilson, and the Big Show Orchestra and Chorus. And every week, your hostess, the glamorous, unpredictable Tallulah Bankhead.
Well, darlings, in a few hours, 1951 will be here. I've devoted this entire day to thinking of the things I've done this past year that I shouldn't have. And I've come up with the most darling resolutions. I can hardly wait till midnight to start breaking them. Meanwhile, our show goes on, and one of our guests, little Margaret O'Brien, keeps tagging after me because she's made up her mind she wants to be an actress in the theater. Just like I am. I feel as if I'm a fairy grandmother. That should be godmother. That misprint was deliberate.
Oh, Tallulah.
Yes, Margaret, darling.
I just saw Gloria Swanson and Jose Ferrer come into the studio.
Yes, Margaret, yes, darling. They're going to do a scene later in the program. From 20th Century, the play they're starring in on Broadway now. It's a drawing room comedy.
What's a drawing room comedy?
Well, it's usually a play where a lot of rich people pay $6.60 to see a lot of poor actors acting like a lot of rich people.
Gee, it must be wonderful to be in a play on Broadway. I wish I was as great an actress as Gloria Swanson.
I beg your pardon, sir. How about me?
Oh, I mean you, too. I wish we both were as great an actress as Gloria.
Darling, I love Gloria. No one better. I would be a very dear friend. But this is her very first play on Broadway. I've been in dozens of plays.
Oh, I know. I know them all. And what fun you must have had in these. Private Lives, The Little Foxes, Skin of Our Teeth, Dark Victory, Rain, Reflected Glory, Mr. Roberts.
Mom! I was never in Mr. Roberts. That's a play with all men in it.
I know, but wouldn't it be fun?
Why, Mr. Bryant, when I was your age, I never... what were you saying, darling?
I was just thinking how wonderful it would be to be a big star in the theater and have your pictures in all the papers and the magazines. I once saw your picture on the cover of Life magazine. How did you ever get them to put your picture on the cover of Life?
Well, someday, darling, I'll explain the facts of life.
Oh, I've been meaning to ask you. Can I have your autograph?
Why, of course, dear child.
Would you write it on these three pieces of paper?
Well, an autograph and triplicate, I am honored.
I need three because the kids outside the theater told me that for three Tallulah Bankheads, you can get one Gloria Swanson.
I was just stabbed.
Oh, I didn't mean what you think. I meant what I said. I mean, I meant because everybody wants your autograph. That's why I'd like three of them. And very few people want Gloria Swanson. You see? Does that sound better?
Darling, have you ever thought of giving up the theater and becoming a surgeon? You put that knife in so gently.
Hey, Tallulah.
Yes, Ken Murray?
I just saw Gloria Swanson and Jose Ferrer come into the studio.
Yeah, so I've been told.
Gee, that Gloria Swanson, she sure looks young for her age, doesn't she?
I look younger for my age than she does for her age. Dad, I did it. I knew it would happen. I finally insulted myself.
Now, wait a minute. Let me figure that thing out. Now, if you say that you're younger for your age than she is for her age, then that makes you older age for age. Is that it?
What I meant is that I'm younger for the age I say I am than she is for the age she really is. And that's older than the age he says she is. Or the age I really am.
Would you mind repeating that question?
And well, what I'm trying to explain, Ken, is you say she looks young for her age. Mm. And I said that I'm younger for the age I say I am than she is for the age she really is. Which is older than the age she says she is, which is older than the age I really am. How many witches were in that sentence?
Only two.
Ken, may I ask you a question?
Why, yes, Margaret.
Why do you always hold that cigar when you're on stage?
Oh, I don't know. It's an old habit, sort of puts me at ease. Here, have one. Try it.
Thank you. Hello, Tallulah.
Well, Fran Warren, darling.
Say, you know who I just saw backstage? Gloria Swanson and Jose Ferrer. She looks so young for her age, doesn't she?
He looks pretty young for her age, too, darling. And, Fran, may I say that you look divine for your age, whatever it is. What are you going to sing for, sweetie pie?
I've got the right to sing the blues.
At her age, look who's got a right to sing the blues. Go ahead, darling, sing it.
Here's a word from RCA Victor. As we look ahead to the gigantic tasks our country must perform in 1951, it's clear that every individual's working life is going to be busier and more complicated than ever before. We're all going to need recreation in our home lives to erase the cares of each long day and recharge our batteries for the next one. That's where television fits in perfectly. And now is the time to see your RCA Victor dealer and choose from 18 beautiful models, each one seemingly more beautiful than the next. You'd do well to choose a 19-inch set for pictures that are wonderfully clear and big.
Of course, they'll have that matchless quality which has made RCA Victor million-proof television far and away America's favorite. Here's wishing you RCA Victor Television, and with it, the high morale which will help so much to make 1951 a happier year for everyone.
You know, darling, the holiday season is traditionally a time of extraordinary excitement in the theater. But these holidays brought us a little more than the ordinary extraordinary. ANTA, meaning American National Theater and Academy, marked a red-letter day in its worthy history when it presented Gloria Swanson, Jose Ferrer, and an all-star cast in Mr. Ferrer's revival of that famous hit play of the 1931-32 season, 20th Century. So tremendous has been the public response that the play is moving over to the Fulton Theater for an extended run. We'll give you a taste of the kind of evening you can look forward to at the Fulton by presenting now a scene from the play starring Miss Swanson and Mr. Ferrer. Ladies and gentlemen, the curtain is up on 20th Century. Story of an eccentric Broadway producer named Oscar Jaffe and his meal ticket, a glamorous bundle of talent and temperament, Lily Garland. This is the story of an overnight train trip on the 20th Century Limited from Chicago to New York. We are several hours east of Toledo, Ohio, as the scene opens. Lily, played by Miss Gloria Swanson, feigns sleep in her apartment. Sadie, the watchful maid, is not at all surprised when the door opens and Oscar Jaffe, played by Mr. Jose Ferrer, reconnoisses the situation.
Another word, Sadie. We must not wake her. Poor child, nobody understands her. She's very delicate. If you don't mind, I'll just sit here for a moment and breathe the air that surrounds her, look at her little possession, and remember things.
Sadie, who's in there?
No, I'm sorry I woke you up.
So it's you. You sneaked in while I was asleep. What do you want, Scorpion?
If it makes you any happier to call me names, go right ahead.
Oscar, you're complete. You're the most horrible excuse for a human being that ever walked on two legs.
You've always misunderstood me, Lily. You lack the true intuitive gift to appreciate great love.
Your philosophy of love doesn't interest me, Mr. Jaffe.
I'm an Oriental, Lily. Love blinded me. That was always the trouble between us as producer and artist.
Oh, so that's what it was it? How about your name in electric lights bigger than everybody's? Your grand illusions that you are a Shakespeare and Napoleon and the Grand Lama of Tibet all rolled into one.
You're absolutely right.
What?
I'm big enough to admit it. I never appreciated your real greatness until I lost you. Why, that last quibble we had about percentages, gad, how small, how cheap I was. What egotism not to know that it was Lily Garland and not Oscar Jaffe.
Running all over town telling people that you had to put chalk marks on the stage so that I'd know where to stand. That you had to teach me to talk like a parrot.
God, it was despicable. I could cut my throat. But I've paid for it 1,000 times since. When I saw that last movie of yours, I only blame myself.
Oh, you've seen it, Eric. Well, you'll be glad to know that it's a tremendous success.
Oh,
I'm marvelous in it. Superb.
Don't say that, Lily. Please,
well, here, if you don't believe me, look at this.
Now, where did you get this dreadful thing? For bowling?
Well, read what it says.
The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. It's pathetic, isn't it? Don't fall for this sort of thing, Lily. There were moments in the film when you were marvelous. Yes, they couldn't stop the real Lily from coming through several times. But that cheap story, that clumsy, unimaginative director, well, he must have been related to the bank.
Well, you're right there. And you want to know why? The director was an idiot. I couldn't get anything into his head. I had to fight him all the time.
It was sacrilege to throw you away on a man like that. I wouldn't have him for my office boy. And the lighting in that picture. Don't you remember how I always brought the lights up every time you stepped on the stage? You became a radiant creature to the audience. People left the theater feeling that they had gone through some great spiritual experience. I left that movie house feeling that some magnificent ruby had been set in a platter of lard. You put yourself back 10 years, Lily, but we can mend that. You'll be greater than ever.
Listen, Oscar, if all this adage is by any chance preliminary to a contract, you can save your breath because
Who's
I'm not
said anything about contracts? Shame on you, Lily.
What are you talking about? You do anything to get my name on a contract.
This billion trophy, this obscene lead statue must be doing things to you. I didn't come in here with contracts. I came with a dream we both had long ago. The thing we planned as a climax to your career. The last golden stair.
Look out.
The courtesan. The great courtesan role.
Oh, look out. Oh, no. So this is a big surprise you have for me. Another part where I'm unworthy of the lieutenant's love and make the great sacrifice.
I wouldn't sneer if I were you.
All right, what is it this time? Montezuma again or that big drama about Hep and Annie, the pride of the gas house?
No, Lily, it's none of these things. This happens to be the greatest woman of all time. Just her memory has kept the world weeping for centuries. The Magdalene.
Magdalene who?
Now, you listen to me, Lily Garland. I'm going to put on the passion play in New York with Lily Garland as Mary Magdalene. I've had it up my sleeve all this time, waiting for the right moment. The wickedest woman of her age. Sensual, heartless, and beautiful. Corrupting everything she touches. Running the gamut from the gutter to glory. Can't you see her, Lily? This little wanton reduced to helplessness. Standing in the street, sobbing and wet through with her own tears. I'm going to have Pontius Pilate ride by in a chariot, and I'm going to splash mud all over her.
No, wait. A pilot sees me. He does a pace.
Yes.
His horse bolts. And Pontius is thrown out on his feet with a broken neck. Oh, and I smile through my tears.
Lily, that's an inspiration. Go on while you're in the creative mood.
Well, I'll tell you how I see the whole thing. I can see the Magdalene as a woman who was an aristocrat at the beginning.
Yes.
And after being brokenhearted by some man she loved madly and trusted, she went down, down, down.
Into the dead.
Hating and despising all men. Laughing at them. So cruel. So terribly cruel.
Yes, Lily, I'm going to make it my greatest production. Gamble every penny on it. I've brought over an entire troop from Europe. Smuggled them across the Alps right through 4 iron curtains. It cost me my shirt, but I wanted them. 2 of them are geniuses.
No, wait a minute, Oscar.
Lily, if the play runs for 5 years, I won't make a dollar. You can have all the money. I only want to stagger New York. A desert scene with 100 camels and real sand brought over from the Holy Land. I'm going to have a Babylonian banquet that you give for your lover in the second act, the governor of Judea, Pontius Pilate, with your slaves all around you. You're covered with emeralds in that scene from head to foot. But that's nothing to the finish, where you stand in rags.
Rags?
In rags, and the Emperor Nero himself offers you half his empire. You answer him with a speech that is probably the greatest piece of literature ever written, and figured with love and sacrifice, and all the lights just pouring down on you. Nero cringes. And the last we see of you is this little pathetic figure selling olives in the marketplace. Lily, it's sublime. Tell me, have I reached the artist in you? What is it?
You're crazy.
What do you mean?
Dear gods, listen to you, Oscar. You're a pure case of leaping paranoia.
Lily.
No, I'm not angry. You're too funny to make anybody angry.
Don't be cheap, Lily.
Coming in here with a lot of camels and real sand from the Holy Land, you're to scream. You're going to put on the passion play. Oh, you haven't $100 to your name.
I can raise millions, millions.
Yes, and I know how you intend to raise them. Get my name on a contract and go out peddling it. Take down some new angel on the strength of my reputation. Well, no, thank you. I'm through being your meal ticket.
You're at liberty to call up any one of my banks in the morning.
Your banks? You mean the ones that are taking your theaters away from you?
That's a lie. You've been listening to my enemy.
I've been listening to Mr. Oliver Webb, your so-called business manager, who broke in here with a sob story about that you were going to commit suicide unless I took pity on you. Well, you go on and commit it. It would be a blessing to all concerned.
Lily, what in heaven's name are you talking about? Mr. Webb is no longer with me. I fired him for stealing.
Oh, shut up. I've had enough of your lies.
Listen to me. I'm offering you your one last chance to become immortal.
Thank you, but I've decided to stay mortal with a responsible management. Max Jacobs.
I can't believe it.
No, read the papers in the morning, then.
Jacobs? He's got paresis. I had to fire him to protect the health of my office force. He's a thief, besides. Illiterate. He can hardly write his name.
He writes them on text, all right, and great big text, too.
Oh, it's money you want. That's what you want. Just another Broadway hand, that's what you've become. I suppose if I jingled a miserable $10,000 or $15,000 in front of your nose, your mouth would begin to water. You'd start drooling and squealing. Gimme, gimme, gimme.
That's right, Oscar. Now get out of here before I have the porter thrown off the train.
Look out who gets thrown off the train.
Get out of here, you fake, you swindler, you.
Hit me, you cheap little shop
get
girl.
Get out before I call the conductor.
Go on, ring that bell. I'll tell the world who's a fake. You are.
I made you. I taught you everything you know. Your voice, your walk, your cheap little talents, they are mine. I gave them to you. I gave up everything to breathe them into you. Even your name, Lily Garland, I gave you that.
Porter, Sadie, conductor!
Well, as soon as there's a God in heaven, Mildred Platter, you'll wind up where you belong, in burlesque.
You loaf!
Bring them on. I'll tell the whole train. I'll tell the whole world. Mildred Platter!
Conductor, throw this man out. Throw him off the train!
Gloria and Jose. Come here, darling. Come over here. That was that fun. That excerpt from your brilliant production of 20th Century.
Gee, thanks, Tallulah.
I find it a lot of fun working in a theater, Tallulah.
I bet you do. And Jose, you directed the play for Broadway, didn't you?
Well, as a matter of fact,
Oh, I read the wonderful notices the critics gave you.
Yes, they certainly were.
And not only for your direction, but for your acting.
Well, they were awful.
And I understand the theater's selling out, which would make you very happy.
Well, of course.
Oh, darling, I know you'd like to go on and just, tell us how wonderful your play is, but I simply must interrupt you.
Well, if you'd only give me a chance to say something, then you could interrupt me.
Well, of course, darling. Go right ahead.
Well, all I wanted to say was that I'd like to go up to my dressing room and change my shirt. I'll be back in a moment.
Oh, why, of course, darling. Go right ahead. You're ringing wet. That's it. Right from there, darling. You gave a wonderful performance. You were superb and so beautifully directed. See you later, darling. Bore.
The first part of The Big Show on Tuned to Yesterday from December 31st, 1950 on NBC. We're going to take a break now, but we'll be back with the second half of the broadcast along with some New Year's fun with comedian Jack Benny. That's in the next hour of Tuned to Yesterday. Stay tuned.